Good morning, everybody. I'm coming from the Eastern Canada, Atlantic Canada, which the seafood industry is big. And as a result, we have a lot of byproducts of the seafood companies, like especially mussel companies. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of these byproducts. And at the moment, the outlet for these byproducts is just landfilling those. But we were looking at some of those to see if there is any nutrient value into these material and if we can use it in the agriculture, especially like organic agriculture that is in need of nutrients, especially nitrogen. So if we can supply some of these material as soil amendment, then the agriculture can use this material. Sorry for the spelling mistake here. It's evaluation of the mussel sediment product. So if you want to see what is mussel sediment, it's basically the byproduct of the mussel companies. And when they harvest mussels from the ocean, there is some mud and feces attached to these to the mussels. So they have to wash it and clean it before they do anything else. So this is the washing process. So they clean the stuff, and they're not allowed to return this material to the ocean. So there are some regulations. What they do, they transfer those to a sedimentation pool here, and then these stuff sediment, they precipitate the material, the suspension, and then they have to kind of dispose this celery. So mussel sediment is this celery that we were talking about. It's kind of very similar to the liquid manure, and the smell is probably similar or even worse. So, unfortunately. So the research objective that we have, well, the hypothesis was the surface sediments or mussel sediment have enough nutrients that we can use those as a supplement or kind of like helping fertilizer. So two things were important for us. One was the consistency of the material during the year. Because if it's not consistent, it's go up and down too much, then we can't use it. We can't recommend it. It's so variable. And the second thing was that to kind of evaluate the nutrient value of the material. So what we did, we analyzed the material during a year by weekly sampling. So every 2 weeks, we took a duplicate sample, send it for the analysis, measure the total nutrients. And just here, I'm going to mention the nitrogen. You see 1.2%, not too bad, with low CN ratio 8. And here is the standard deviation, not too bad. Sulfur level was really high. This is like 4 or 5 times higher than the manure, the regular manure that you're using. So it's a good source of sulfur, calcium, magnesium again, and boron. So these are the ones that I highlighted were the major nutrients that we're going to focus on that. Here is a little bit, I compare it with the dairy manure, swine manure, and poultry manure. You see the total nitrogen is comparable. So a little bit less than the poultry manure, but not too bad with low CN ratio. Phosphorus, potassium, very low. So in the cases that we have high phosphorus levels, so that's a good choice to go and supplement their stuff with this material. The other thing is that the sulfur deficiency, we're living in a humid environment with more than 1,000 milliliters of rainfall. We start seeing the sulfur deficiency, and I did a survey of the area that I was living there with 500 soil samples, 15 field mixed farms, and the sulfur level was less than 40, is like 40 kilograms per hectare is the critical level. 71% of our soil samples were below the critical level. So this could be an option for supplying both nitrogen and sulfur at the same time. This is the consistency over the year. If you see here is the months, okay, it started from May to June, and here is nitrogen, sulfur, and carbon concentration. If you look at the black line here, is the nitrogen. You see the nitrogen levels, they're around 1.23, and it's not too bad, it's not too variable. So between 1 and 1.5 is always, during the year, was like that. There is some carbon, about 10% carbon in this material, and sulfur is here, was not too bad. But again, when we look at the calcium, magnesium, you see more variability in those parameters. And when you go to the micronutrients, again, more variability, except for the, well, boron, it was variable, but it was always like above 45. So what we did a greenhouse experiment with two test plants, tomato and arroy. And the reason for that was that because tomato is, they're two totally different crops with two different root systems, two different ability to uptake nutrients. Tomato is weak, a very weak root system, and arroy is very efficient in uptaking nutrients from the soil. We planted the tomato for 9 weeks, and we harvested at the flowering stage. Annual arroy, we had 12 weeks to cut. So treatment was control, 14,000 liters of these sediments or celery, 28,000 liters, 42,000 liters was our maximum rate. And the other treatment that I thought might be useful, I added to that, was the mid rate, which was 28, plus the rest as a fertilizer recommendation. So I made a guess. I said 50% of nitrogen is probably available, around 50. That was my guess, and I was testing with this treatment. So the rest of that I supplied with the fertilizer. Yeah. And all these treatments, they received the phosphorus, potassium if they need. So nitrogen was the major nutrient deficient there. And then I had a fertilizer control that, based on the soil recommendation, I added that. So the assumption was 50% of total nitrogen is available. We used a very poor soil. It was low nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium especially low. Again, pH and CEC was very low. Organic matter was 2%, which is low in our area. So these are recommendations for fertilizer that we apply. Here, to just give you an idea of, with each of these rates, how much nutrient we supply, I put this graph. So for nitrogen, the low rate was 33 kilogram total nitrogen, 66 second rate, and 99 was the total nitrogen in the third treatment that we applied. Very little of phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium was again significant amount of those nutrients. So what I did like mix it with the soil, different rates in a pot experiment, greenhouse, completely randomized design, and here are some of the results that we got. So this is a visual assessment. You see, this is control soil, were very poor in the nitrogen, so we didn't get much here. But you see, with increase, you see the linear increase in the crop growth here, and you see that this treatment that was mix of the sediment and fertilizer did really good. Little bit less yield than the fertilizer, which means my estimation of 50% was too high. So I overestimated the nitrogen availability. So it should be a little bit lower than 50, like around 40, that we're going to see later. So, but this plant, S28,000 liter plus fertilizer, was much healthy looking than the just fertilizer. At the end, it was much like healthier and greener, and I don't know why really. It's probably because of the other nutrients that were there available. Same story with the annual rye, but the response of annual rye was less because annual rye is just pumping everything out, so it's more efficient in uptaking whatever nitrogen or mineralizable nitrogen was there. But again, these two treatments, you see they're really high. Look at the graphs for the dry matter. This is tomato. You see just the linear relationship. So here is dry matter based on gram, and here are the different treatments, start from control, 14, 28, 42, again mix and fertilizer. You see fertilizer had higher yield than this mix. It means our guess was too high. So here is the ratio of the root to shoot. It didn't change, shoot-root ratio. This is annual rye. It was less response. As you see here, between 28 and 42, there was not significant difference. So, but the shoot-root ratio was much higher than tomato. If you see compared to the previous one, it's much larger, so it was much more efficient. But it was, again, a linear response. Now, I got this is the brand new data. I just put it together last night. So you can imagine I was up till 2 o'clock. But it's a very nice story, you know. It shows the uptake. So this is nitrogen. Nitrogen concentration and uptake in the plant. So this one always your left side is rye, annual ryegrass, and your right is tomato, right? So here is the nitrogen uptake, here is the treatment, and here is the nitrogen concentration. The dark bars is the concentration, and the lighter bars there are the uptake. So we normally look at the uptake and see, really nice, it's very linear. And here you see a little bit curve here. So when we went to the fertilizer, the annual ryegrass was more responsive to the fertilizer. It loved fertilizer somehow. But the tomato was nicer to us. It was like very linear and it's very nice. But when you look at the concentration of the nutrients in the plant, in the whole plant concentration, you see it's very different in two plants. See? They're reacting differently. The concentration here stays constant and then go up here. It's more or less constant. So I'm going to show you other nutrients too. I still didn't totally figure out why those two different plants, the concentration of the nutrient acting very different in these two. I'm not sure why, but there could be the dilution effect. It could be some synergic effect or some antagonistic effect. So it's very interesting. So here calcium, look at the calcium. Again, look at the light bars. They all linearly almost added. There was no significant difference between the mix and fertilizer because we supply a lot of calcium with this sediment. But again, when you look at the concentration, compare the annual ryegrass with tomato, you see that sediment application increased concentration of the calcium only in tomato compared with the, so here you see you have higher concentration, it's retain higher concentration here compared to the fertilizer somehow, but here it was not the case. So here I put the critical nutrient ratio here, range, critical nutrient range. You see that it's for calcium is 0.3 to 1, for tomato same thing was 1 to 3, and you see we were in the sufficient range. Similar, exactly same story with magnesium. So calcium, magnesium, they're acting very similarly. Sulfur concentration, interesting because we supplied a lot of sulfur. And you see here, again, the response was linear, but the response of the concentration is very mixed. In the ryegrass, you see it's almost the same thing, but here you see a significant decrease. So a kind of synergic effect is, you see, is reduced when you apply the other fertilizer compared to the control. Boron, again, same story, but here, look at the tomato. When you apply the sediment, you got huge amount of boron in the crop, but much less in the fertilizer. That was not the case for the ryegrass, so that's interesting. So just as a summary here, the concentration of nitrogen, sulfur remain mostly constant in this product during the year. And the major nutrients that they can supply is nitrogen, sulfur, calcium, magnesium, boron. And the response was really huge. In potato was 5.5 times higher dry biomass, in ryegrass 1.9. And the higher application rate of sediment up to 42,000 resulted in the higher uptake of other nutrients. The amount that I measured for the nitrogen efficiency, or the total amount of total nitrogen that was available, was 38 for tomato, 43% of total nitrogen was available for the ryegrass, and no negative impact. And we need to be a little bit careful with electrical conductivity. We're running some field experiment this year, so on potatoes and on broccoli. So we're hoping to see these results soon. And thank you so much to the supporter of this project. That one was the major was the Prince Edward Aqua Farms. Thank you.